It's Reese on the radio.
And Ren, don't say we didn't warn you. On News Talk 1080, WTIC.
Yeah, let's do the thing.
Between rounds.
And congratulations goes to Ed S. That is Ed S. in Southington. He is the winner of the dozen bagels a month for 6 months, courtesy of Between Rounds, the Bagel Bakery and Sandwich Cafe, located in South Windsor, Vernon, and Manchester. If you'd like an opportunity to win, you got to go to reeseontheradio.com. That's R-E-E-S-E on the radio.com to enter. Please put in your telephone number and your date of birth. It is important that we get that in there, or Roland will not send you your bagels. In fact, he'll just send the name back to me and say, we don't have a telephone number or a date of birth. So make sure you fill all that out. You must live in the state of Connecticut, and you must not have won within the last 6 months. You also cannot be Roseanne on the radio. I didn't realize it was Tuesday, and I was going to say that Bob Smirnick was in with weather, but I knew that was wrong because he was in yesterday. So Bob Larson's back with weather coming up in a bit. When we return, I'm going to talk to you about Susan Campbell, who wrote an opinion piece about a Trump revenge tour in Connecticut. This, of course, has to do with immigration in the state and the fight against Donald Trump. There's another article by Dan Haar, talking about how lawmakers are going to be fighting against Donald Trump and ICE to prevent them from getting illegals out of the state. The interesting part about this article is that no one seems to know how to fight ICE. And there's another article that was in the Hartford Courant over the weekend that said, you know, that kids at school are afraid of ICE and they're concerned that, you know, children are not going to be allowed to school, of course, because of the Meriden. By the way, I am getting some back, some information on the Meriden High School kid. Kevin Moreno. I'm getting some, information on his whereabouts and why he is being held, from ICE. They should be contacting me, if not today, maybe tomorrow, but I'll have some follow-up on that story. All right? So when we come back, we'll talk about all those stories and much, much more. Let's get into another check of weather and traffic with Bob Larson and Mark Christopher in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
It's Reese on the radio on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
So I'm reading this article this morning, and it is by Dan Haar in the Connecticut Insider. Connecticut to weigh new protections against ICE. Other Trump moves as activists bring pressure. And in this article, it's always kind of inside the details. You know the old saying, devil's in the details. And as I'm reading this, it keeps talking about activist groups who are putting pressure on Democrat leaders in the legislature, in the Senate, and even the governor. This article puts in front of this, in essence, the activist groups are the ones who are determining the policy when it comes to Democrats in the state. How that's problematic or how it isn't problematic, I don't know, but it is. Here's one paragraph. It's all part of what appears to be a new phase in the political wars, stepped up by policy actions by opponent of Trump's orders, making it all more complex. Connecticut's Democrat-nominated General Assembly and its Democrat governor are not just debating among themselves with the local Republicans. No one can say how this new round of actions will land in Washington, D.C., and what countermeasures they might bring. Quote, you're going to start seeing tons of communities, public hearings, and informational sessions after Labor Day, said House Speaker Matt Ritter of Hartford. He said that before the holiday weekend. That started Tuesday, and the legislature's Human Services Committee launches an informational hearing, meaning that speakers will be invited experts, but not general public, on the possible federal cuts in Medicaid and family food assistance. Also Tuesday, Lamont and other state officials will be at the Connecticut Food Share office and warehouse talking about previously announced new aid and the private group that supports 600 local food pantries. Ritter described a multi-pronged approach that will culminate in a special session most likely in October, rather than September, as many had expected. Two issues lie at the core. First, adjustments to compensate for cuts in federal support, especially in food, energy, and health care, and a revived housing bill to replace the one the Democrats passed in the spring, only to see Lamont slap it down with a veto. This is inside an article talking about ICE removing illegals. Do you understand? All of this is about illegals getting tax dollars and how it is the most important issue ever. Why? Why is it the most important issue ever? Because they have 684,000 constituents to care about. That against a paltry 384,000 blacks in the state. And if you know that the number of people 18 and up in the black community are only 298,000, let's just round it up for 300,000 folks. Let's just round it up. Versus close to 500,000 in the Hispanic community. What's the percentage that show up at the polls in the black community versus the Hispanic Latino community? What's the number? That number used to be 24% in the black community. Used to be. In Connecticut, what do you think it is? Come on, folks. Let's be honest. What do we really think it is? I would be stretching if I thought it was 18%. Stretching. I think that's too modest. Does anybody notice, by the way, Connecticut does not keep numbers on race and election data? Did you know that? Who thinks that's bull? Who thinks that's bogus? They know exactly who their constituents are. And that number is important. That 479,000, 18 and older, putting all of that effort into protecting them against ICE, it is everywhere in the news cycle. No matter who the news outlet is, they are focusing on this issue. It's the most important issue to all of them. It is, and again, what are they talking about? Housing, food, Medicaid, Social Security. All of the things they tell us illegals do not have a foothold in at all. But here we've got William Tong, we've got Gilchrist, Justin Ellicker. He was just in the top of the hour news talking about that. Oh, we got to make sure that we take care of our people. They're talking about taxpayer dollars. And no one's saying a word. Look, if there are people in the state that are fine with their tax dollars going to illegals in the state, fine. Just be upfront about it. If you're okay with them having Social Security benefits, say it. If you're okay with them having Section 8 housing, okay, say it. But they won't. They keep telling us over and over again that it's not being done. And then to have the public officials and the elected officials contradict their own claims. Remember, they told us that for the longest. They called this program and this network and told us that it wasn't happening, that any suggestion was a flat-out lie. And now we've got people suing the Trump administration to do exactly the opposite of what they said wasn't happening. And no one says a word. Let's go to Ralph. Hey, how are we doing, sir?
Oh, hanging in there in beautiful weather down here like you guys are having. Hey, Reese, have you ever gone up 95 north and south?
Of course. I mean, I spent like half my childhood up and down the 95 corridor.
And you've seen the signs, Virginia is for lovers?
I used to live in Virginia, so yes.
Well, with the new with the Democratic candidate for governor, they're changing the signs. Virginia is for criminals.
Yeah, Spamberger was always, I didn't even think that she had aspirations to be governor when I was there. It's nice to see her getting her butt kicked by what's her name? Why am I forgetting her name now? Sears.
Right.
Winsome, yeah.
Winsome Sears. But another thing, can you imagine, now you're a pretty sharp guy, running TV commercials, the Republicans, showing criminals with their records saying, this is who she supports and wants in the state to prey on your families. Can you see these ads running every day, Reese?
They have to run every day.
And they should do it in Connecticut because Connecticut does the same thing. I don't know of anybody in their right mind who doesn't want convicted criminals thrown out of this country. I don't know any.
I think that a strong part of that is, like, you have to really think about this. I was playing this audio earlier, and maybe I'll play the other clip to it as well. So they do not believe in the criminality of crossing the border. That has been this conversation online and in the newsrooms, that they believe that criminality has these sort of tiers, if you will, right? They don't believe that crossing the border is illegal and it shouldn't be counted as a crime as you would, I don't know, theft. They don't consider that a crime, even though damn well those people coming into the country and stealing housing, stealing finance, you know, pretty much, you know, benefits from other American citizens who could use it, like the people in North Carolina after the storm, that is all a form of theft, but they don't see it that way. They see it as need.
Of course not. And they talk about the lack of housing. You know why? You're a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
The lack of housing because all these illegals are taking it. And they're taking away from American citizens.
Exactly. And again, they cannot. What I think is happening here is, like Chris Murphy has done, and we've shown examples of this, is that anyone who pushes back on their efforts to get this housing to illegals in the state is racist in kind, right? So you can't question them on what they're doing, leaving other people out in the cold and addressing those needs for illegals. Anything even remotely pushed back to that means that you are a racist. So, and what happens when you ask a question like that? You're immediately on the defensive. I'm not a racist. And then that completely takes you off the ball. I tell them, I don't care if you think I'm racist.
Reese, in my firm belief, I believe that you have a better chance of becoming president than Chris Murphy.
Well, you're probably right about that. Thank you, boss.
The man hasn't got the brain God gave him that.
I appreciate it. Which, by the way, speaking of which, okay, here I am with a salary and a job, and you think Reese on the radio is gonna find housing in Connecticut? Should I go down, since I'm here already? Maybe I should go 4 hours south, cross the border, and somebody will get me housing any place I want to. That's what I'll do. I'll cross the border at the Rio Grande, come back over, and when they ask me, hey, where do you want to live? I'll go, Farmington, Connecticut, roughly a 2 to 3 bedroom spot. Maybe you can help a brother out. Let's go to Bill in Torrington. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Reese. How are you today?
Pretty good, sir. What's up?
I think it's laughable that anyone who would think that illegals aren't getting benefits when the Democrats tell us all the time that they have to look out for the constituents that matter most. In fact, on multiple occasions, you've played audio clips of Chris Murphy saying exactly that.
Exactly the point. And they know, look, the other part that I don't seem to understand, Bill, is that who are the people who are, as far as constituents go, who are they who are echoing that same sentiment that these people are the most important. We never hear from those folks. They may show up at these rallies, but I don't see them there. I remember the rally that we had with Chris Murphy in West Hartford with Chris Murphy and Dick Blumenthal. The people who showed up there, almost every person in the room was the activist class. There were not average citizens there.
And that's who shows up to most of those rallies. People who are activists, or people, as you've said many times, are people who are paid to be there.
Yes.
I'm trying to talk slower than I usually do.
You're doing great, Bill. I appreciate you, buddy.
I'm your fast-talking friend from Torrington.
I know you are, Bill. Thank you so much, man. I always appreciate the call. Thank you for joining. Let's go to Wall Street Joe before we take a break. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Reese. How's Fountain Village going?
Not yet. It hasn't gotten to that point yet, but we're crossing our fingers.
I've gotten some inside word that some of the illegals love it there.
I believe it. See, now I'm the type of guy, Joe, that if I were to see them, I would go right up to them and interview them.
That's why I thought you'd be there. You'd be in the heart of the storm.
Absolutely. I would love to. Look, I've talked to them. In fact, you know what? Now that you mention it, I do have to call my sister-in-law. I talk about it all the time. She got into this country in the trunk of a car when she was 16 years old, through the southern border. And I'll never forget my conversation with her. In fact, my brother was hesitant to introduce her to me because of that. He was like, I don't know if you should meet her. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with her? And he was like, well, she got here illegally. And I'm like, okay. Like, he thought that I was just this, you know, this conservative that was just like, heretic. And I was, you know, I sat and I talked to her for a while. She told me the whole story. I found it fascinating. What was I going to do, call ICE on her? She was legal by the time I met her anyway. But it was an interesting story because it gave me sort of an insight that a lot of us don't really see. And I talked to another woman not too long ago, Joe, who was a smuggler of people into the country. And that
very lucrative.
Yeah, it was, you know, but no, here's the thing. This will blow your mind. She, like many others who were smuggling in, were all addicted to drugs. And the cartels sought out drug users to pay them pennies on the dollars. So even they were finding cheap labor to help and assist them in smuggling people. I'm going to talk a little bit about it on the next side of the break. Thank you, Joe.
Yes.
You got it. Yeah. How incredible is that? They were penny pinching, cartels, penny pinching, getting low income wages, paying low income wages to smugglers into the United States. I'll tell you about it on the other side. Let's get another check of the weather and traffic with Bob Larson and Mark Christopher's in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
Stay locked in. Locked in. Reese on the radio is on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
One of the things that I've always paid attention to is how people talk about where other people live. And I don't know if you heard this from the Washington Post, but the Washington Post put this out talking to, I guess, people who used to work in Bristol at ESPN. Roland, you'll love this. So here's the piece in the Wall Street Journal. When ESPN told employees in March that it would be closing its Los Angeles Sports Center operation, it gave about 35 staffers a choice: move to the network's headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut, or lose your job. Fewer than half accepted. That was fine with ESPN. To work at the world's most storied sports media company is often Bristol or bust, and ESPN isn't going anywhere. Employees have lamented living in the central Connecticut city practically since ESPN was founded in 1979. Decades later, Bristol is often still a punchline. Former host Keith Olbermann jokingly called it a godforsaken place on the East Coast, during an appearance with former ESPN colleague Craig Kilborn, I guess that's his name, The Daily Show. Bill Rasmussen, ESPN's founder, described the Roots as saying they took a dump and put grass, fresh grass over it and called it prime real estate, he called it. Now, again, I only read this because I often try to remind people, think about what people say about your state and think about the people who do. And then consider the source. Keith Olbermann? Really? Craig Kilborn? Really? Where are they now? Where are they now? The fact that anybody would quote the two of those guys, I just, again, don't get it, but here we are. Keith Olbermann. Ripping Bristol. That's why you have to have hometown pride. Now, I'm from Hollis, Queens. I will tell you this, as, you know, as long as I live, I represent Hollis, Queens. I do. New York, a different animal. They killed that place, but I represent Hollis, Queens. Run DMC, LL Cool J all day. That will always, no matter how crappy it gets, I will always represent Hollis, Queens. But don't let people crap on your town, Keith Olbermann. It's, you know, it's kind of bad. You gotta make those guys, you know, recognize. Anyway, we move on. Let's get back to weather and traffic. Bob Larson and Mark Grismer's in a BPS traffic center. Can you believe that crapping on Bristol where ESPN is?
I'm not surprised by Olbermann. He seems to flame out wherever he goes, and he.
The NAACP calls him.
Whoa! I don't think I'm allowed to read this.
It's Reese on the radio.
Let's just say some people are not fans.
On News Talk 1080,
WTIC.
Let's get to the phones. Plenty of you have been on hold. I promise I will get to you. Also, when we come up, I've got some movie news, some Hollywood news to get to. So stand by for that. It's pretty fun today, especially for you gamers out there. I'm always iffy about Hollywood and gaming, you know, the video game sort of space. But this one was actually pretty good news. Let's go to Frank, who's in Woodbridge. How are you, sir?
Good. I got about 2 minutes. We're leaving to Sicily. I want to just tell you this. You missed the biggest story, though, because you weren't on Friday. Donald Trump lost in federal court with the tariffs. Ever since then, gold is going through the roof. Now, tomorrow he's going to the Supreme Court. I'll be in Sicily. I'll follow the story. If he loses in the Supreme Court, that gold is going to go to the moon because it's going to blow such a hole in the deficit. We're going to have to get back all that money. All the bills of debt.
I don't believe he's going to lose because.
Well, but I hope not.
Oh no, I don't think he is. And again, this is one of those deals where, you know, this isn't. Donald Trump has gone painstakingly to make sure that the letter of the law is followed with it. Like people are thinking that Donald Trump is just coming up with these executive orders that are going to be challenged, and they don't have a backup plan. They've gone through the letter of the law because they know that it's going to end up in the Supreme Court anyway, and it's forcing their hand. Without a doubt, I don't think it's going to turn out.
Let me tell you this before I go.
Yes.
Rush Limbaugh, the great Rush Limbaugh, before he died, he said the Supreme Court would never, never overturn Roe versus Wade. May he rest in peace. He was
Hold on. And guess what? I was the only person who disagreed with him openly.
Right. But, I mean, you can't take the chance. This is the biggest decision. If they lose, we got to get back $300 or $400 billion, and all those deals are dead. It's going to blow a hole through the debt.
I know that's going to pay for the tax cuts. And guess what? And I know exactly he's not going to fail at the Supreme Court.
Right,
but anyway.
Good luck with your new place, you and Roseanne. And tell Roseanne I said happy birthday. And let me tell you something. Next time I go to Sicily, I want you on that plane with me.
You got it, boss man. I appreciate it.
Take care. I'll call you October 1st when I get back.
You got it. Let's go to Sam in West Hartford. How are you, Sam?
How you doing, Reese?
What's up?
So I'm calling to get off topic a little bit. I just want to let people know that Sergeant Brian Fahey was arrested.
Yeah, we mentioned that last
tomorrow
Friday.
Tomorrow in Danielson.
Yes.
So anyone who wants to support their First Amendment freedom, please go to Danielson Court tomorrow and peacefully protest.
God, we did mention it Friday, Sam, as soon as we literally broke news, as soon as it came over, one of the people in the chat room let us know. I think Zach was the one who let us know. We did report on it.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Thank you. And let's go to Sean in Meriden. How are you, Sean?
Good. Just real quick. I just called the governor's office and asked him about illegal immigrants in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
And they go, we don't consider them illegals. We consider them undocumented people. I said, so if I go to a store right now and I liberate them of their money, I'm not really robbing them. I'm really relocating their finances to a insecure place like me. Right? And he goes, that's ridiculous. I said, that's what you think we're doing. You think we're sucking, we're biting the bullet, and we don't understand that you're taking our taxpayer dollars and giving them to illegal immigrants who have not invested a dime into the thing, and it's not coming out of his pocket. It's coming out of those who have a job. And I said, do you think that's fair? He goes, I'm not really sure. I said, if you're not sure, then you should quit your job. Because then you don't understand.
I don't think that they
work to put money away.
I don't think that they understand a tough question at all. And what I've always asked about this undocumented thing, then what does that make you and I, Sean? Are we documented Americans? We are. Right? If they're undocumented immigrants, are you and I documented Americans? I thought we were just Americans.
And what are the benefits of the documented Americans? Because we have to work harder to get our documents.
Great point. Very good point. Thank you, Sean. I appreciate you. One more. Let's go to Fulton and Waterbury. How are you, sir?
What's up, buddy? I want to talk about police funding. I mean, I don't know if everybody knows how much federal funding goes into police departments in Connecticut. I mean,
I don't know. I can look it up real quick. What do you got?
No. I'm going to talk because I was a cop. So most vice squads have an ATF agent and a DEA agent working out of them. So,
are
those people part of the Trust Act? Or can you not help them as cops?
Such a good point. Such a good point.
We take that money, right? And every federal grant we take for like everything, I don't understand. Like we had a lot of positions that were great positions through federal grants. What happens when Trump decides, oh, you don't want to cooperate? Okay, no more federal money. Like I would imagine it makes up a lot of the budget of most departments.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a huge part of this Dan Haar article talking about the Trust Act and whether or not they should expand on it, which means it's going to take another legislative session where they're going to have to expand the rules of the Trust Act, in essence keeping the local government local police from helping federal agents or ICE no matter what the threat is.
That's going to cut them twice because that's going to help them with their Border Patrol nonsense that's going on now, whatever. And then it's going to come back and bite them when it comes back the full way, you know?
Like, exactly. That's more than likely what's going to happen here is that they will argue that they should get federal funding while refusing to assist ICE agents getting criminals out of the state.
Like I would just say you don't get any. Like, you don't want to, you know, like, if we don't have any ATF agents, we're going to pull them. There goes all your gun funds.
Yep. So
what's going to happen in New Haven when you have no gun funds? I mean, there's like how many murders now?
Yeah, look, it's not like it can't be done. Sean Duffy pulled transportation money from the state of Connecticut.
In 2000, and around the 2000s, they had a thing called Project Safe Neighborhood in Washington.
Yeah.
Okay. It was run by Pat Griffin. He's now the state's attorney in Hartford, the head state's attorney. Mm-hmm. They put people federally with gun crime. So if you had a gun in Waterbury and we caught you, you were doing federal time, which is much harder than state time. So, and it got guns off the street. It put bad people away for a long time. I think that's what they really need to do with the car.
I agree.
So that's all my point today.
You got it, sir. I couldn't agree with you more about that Fed crime.
Where was it more deadly? Was it more deadly in Chicago? Or was it more deadly in Afghanistan or Ukraine and
You know what? As Chicago for a long time, even during like the drawdown out of Iraq, was still safer than Chicago at the same time.
54 shot, 7 dead in Chicago this week. And what was the death count in Afghanistan and Israel? Not even close, right?
Like, yeah.
Where would you rather be, right? Palestine or Chicago? That's a bad count.
Exactly. Good point.
All right.
Thank you, boss.
That's all I got today.
You got it, boss. Thank you. Yeah, that's such a good point because of the fact that you know, I almost feel like the citizens in Chicago and D.C. for a while, but I can name any one of these, Los Angeles, San Francisco. I was watching a video over the weekend about pickpocketing. I have no idea why, but it ended up in the scroll of things that I was watching, and pickpocketing showed up. And I thought it was interesting in the discussion of this sort of misdirect. Like, how do you get, like, how does an average pickpocketer work today? And we've seen the routine pickpocketer. And, Roland, have you ever been pickpocketed? Anybody ever take, like, anything out of your, off your person? Never had it happen? Okay. Are you keep your head on a swivel in crowded places, or do you just not go to crowded places?
Both.
Okay, good. I was a kid. I was roughly about, I want to say about 7, 8 years old. And a couple of kids taught me about pickpocketing. And it was a place called, gosh, I can't remember the name of the town. It was in New York, though. I want to call it was Boomfield or Bloomfield, New, I can't remember. But it's near Elmira. And these kids who were trying to get me into Pink Floyd were teaching me about pickpocketing. And they taught me, like, how pickpocketers worked in their town. And the objective was to bump my shoulder to then take the wallet or whatever belonging was out of my back pocket. So they were trying to warn me, never keep anything in your back pocket, because all you need is a distraction. You distract them by this thing, and once you have their attention, they're not paying attention to the thing that they're trying to steal. It's like sleight of hand magic. That's all it is in a pickpocketing sense. And so as I'm watching it, and these are like Romanian guys online, and they are with this reporter, and the reporter's following them with a camera as they steal items from people just riding the train or walking into busy streets, stealing stuff out of women's purses, stealing their sunglasses out of their pockets, things that, you know, that didn't even matter or people didn't pay attention to, just stuff that you put in your pocket. And they were taking them out of the weirdest places, like places you know you would normally feel someone lifting an item from. But they talked about the distractions. What was also crazy is that they were working in crowds. Like, I'm sorry, not just in crowds, I apologize. They were working with teams. So it would be about 3, 4, sometimes 5 guys on one mark. But what as I was watching all of this, and the amazing technique of how they pickpocket you, I was thinking about Pritzker and, you know, and what's his name, Governor Newsom, Tim Walz and the like, some of these people in these major cities where all of the crime is. And I equate it to sort of pickpocketing, where the distraction is Donald Trump. Like, all of these horrible things that are going to happen if you don't stop him. And the end result is the stuff that is going to be taken from you. That's all this is. It's almost done in the same vein. Like, Governor Pritzker was out on the trail telling Americans and fellow citizens of Illinois that they must stop Trump from bringing in the National Guard, because that is about something else. While that is happening, as you heard earlier, some 50 people shot, 7 died, murdered. And the focus is supposed to be on Donald Trump and not that. Like, everyone else is just going, yeah, but Trump. And I don't believe that any of that is true. I do believe that people are really paying attention to their pockets being picked here, especially in Chicago. I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't believe that any one of those people in Chicago are saying to themselves, yeah, but Trump. I don't believe that. I don't believe that stopping Trump is the necessary evil. Right? Like, let's focus on him while our average citizens are murdered in the streets. People are filming themselves at parks where kids are playing soccer or baseball or football. And they're ducking on the ground while kids are shooting wildly at each other through a park. It's like these kids went to the park to air out their grievances with loaded weapons. Like they said to themselves, where's a good place to have a rumble? I know, Sesame Street. Let's just fire randomly at a place where kids dwell. It's funny because I look at this and I draw the comparison earlier when I talked about those activists who were throwing stones and bricks at the ICE agents as they were driving kids out of slave labor, that they were throwing bricks at moving vehicles, putting the lives of the ICE agents and the children in danger. And then I look at the gang shootings in Chicago or Gary, Indiana or Los Angeles, and I go, the people who are screaming Donald Trump is a threat, an existential threat, while this is happening in their neighborhoods, and they don't see it. That these kids are seeing each other in the street and just pulling out the weapons and just firing while they recognize children are running and playing, living their lives. When everyone else is sitting there going, how could that possibly be? Because they don't care about who it affects. Neither do the people who are screaming and hollering at you that it's Trump and not the deadly shootings in the neighborhood. They don't care. It's a necessary evil for them. And the necessary evil is, you know what? In order to stay in power, it's okay for you to die. What good were you anyway? You don't vote. You don't show up. I don't understand it. You have no capital. When we return, let me do this. We're going to do Hollywood news at the top of the hour. I'm going to tell a story I've told time and time again about a little street in Brooklyn. You don't want to miss it. It's a story about political weight. When we return, I'll actually find the story if I can. Let's get another check of weather and traffic with Bob Larson and Mark Christopher's in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.